So most coaches, they want a player-led team, except now more than ever, I think players are not able or skilled to hold each other accountable, right? They are more focused on themselves than on leading each other. So as coaches, you end up having to be the accountability police every day, and it's exhausting, right? And the reality is you cannot police all the behaviors of the people on your team and your organization, right? The coach-led team isn't working anymore, right? Now, building that player-led team, it's actually really simple, just not that easy, right? First, you have to have really clear standards, and you want to empower your team to help you set those standards around how you're going to do things. And secondly, you've got to get them to take personal ownership and responsibility over those standards. And then lastly, you need to get them, the team, the players, to support each other in those behaviors instead of it always being you, the coach, who's stepping in. Now, it's easier said than done, like I just said, right? But one of the best systems that we've discussed on this podcast for developing this is Mark Bennett's rule of three. Now, after episode 113 on transformational discipline, episode 76 with Mark on discussing the rule of three, it's this most popular episode of the Coaching Culture podcast of all time. Now, since our interview with Mark, many coaches we've worked with, they've been looking to apply this tool, but we've noticed they've been hesitant doing to feel that they're still unequipped. They feel like they lack the skills to coach in this way where they're empowering players to support each other. So in this episode, Nate and I, we're going to share some of the simple ways that we applied not only the rule of three, but have helped coaches implement a support and accountability system within their culture, where people, first, they take responsibility of themselves, and secondly, they support their teammates before the coaches have to intervene. Now, if you apply these strategies and procedures in your program, I'm promising you that you're going to see a shift in your culture this season. Your players are going to start to develop the necessary skills to not only self-correct, but to peer correct. I had a coach who put this off for like literally an entire season. He just felt he wasn't ready to take that step. And when he finally took the plunge this season, he's literally shooting himself now for not doing it last year because he's realized how much of a transformation in his players he missed out on last season. Because the players now, they're enjoying their training, their games, they're enjoying the team culture significantly more this season. And this coach now has significantly more energy walking the gym every day, knowing that it's not all on him to maintain the standards and the behaviors on the way they want to do things in their team. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. And every week in 30 minutes or less, we're giving you transformational leadership tools and strategies. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive On Challenge, which provides mentorship for coaches to help them grow as a coach and build their culture. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. You're listening to episode 119, The Four Steps to Implementing the Rule of Three Within Your Culture. Now, just before we get started, heads up, our next public workshop is going to be in Chicago on April 5th. That is a coaching culture workshop that Nate and I will be putting on, all-day event, deep diving into some systems and strategies to build your culture and improve your leadership. So check it out at thriveonchallenge.com/public-workshop. There'll be a link in the episode details as well. So when working with coaches, one of the first steps, in becoming that player-led team isn't about actually getting them to even take responsibility for their own behavior or to support each other's. It starts with how you set the standards around the behaviors. And initially, in most programs, this is often done from the coach, but we really work with coaches to help their players, to empower their players to set standards. Now, I love Mark Bennett's terminology on the acronym UAE, unacceptable, acceptable, and exceptional, because it's a very simple way to get your team to identify behaviors that are going to drive your team's performance, that are going to drive the type of experience they want to create. It's a great story about just the power of actually having them determine these standards in a very, very simple way, because, you know, we often talk about standards and setting those in a big, grand team meeting, which is important, and it's effective to do that at the start of the year with your team. But in a small way, this is just a really cool story. I know, I think I might have shared it on the podcast before, but this is just a small way to do it with your team. So about 5-6 years ago, I took one of my teams from Tennessee. We drove 8 hours down to Florida, and we were heading in after this 8-hour drive into the Olive Garden to have a team meal. And just before we get off the bus, instead of giving my guys the usual speech around, hey guys, we're going in there, you know, remember you represent the school, and keep your voices down and be polite and all those things. And instead of giving that speech, I'd given 100 times before, I just asked them really quickly, what would a great team dinner look like right now? Like, what would make this great? And over literally 2 to 3 minutes, they started throwing out a few different suggestions on some standards or behaviors they felt would be really important. And they ended up coming up with 3. The first they came up was no phones, right? They wanted to interact. They wanted to be communicating. They want to have fun together. And they realized that having their phones out was going to keep them from doing that. The second thing was keep their voices down. So they recognized after a bit of discussion that, you know, they could get loud and that could be disruptive to the other patrons in the restaurant. And the third thing they said was just please and thank you. Just say please and thank you to the waitress at our table. And it was an incredible experience, because not only did we go in and have a really nice team dinner, and I was very, very proud of their behavior in that moment, but someone actually took a snapshot of our team bus after that team dinner and posted it on social media and ended up going viral. Just that person was, that other patron of the restaurant was just blown away by the behavior of our team. As she said on social media, she never seen such a well-behaved team in a restaurant before. Now, the cool part about the story is I didn't have to tell them anything around the way they should behave. They were able to determine those behaviors. And just by simply doing that, by them establishing the behaviors, they were more likely to follow through on that as individuals, and also more likely to hold each other accountable, as opposed to I had read out or just lectured them on being on their best behavior. So one of my encouragements for coaches is to not just focus on empowering your players to set standards on your program as a whole, or set standards or use that UAE like Mark Bennett talks about within the training session, like within a drill or within a small-sided game, but to empower them in all these little moments in team dinners and when you get together in a team meeting, when you're at a hotel, you know, but you starting with questions like, what does success look like here? What does a great team look like? What is unacceptable or acceptable? I just worked with a coach just, you know, the other day on having his team use the UAE to define what would be acceptable and unacceptable when they miss a shot, when they turn the ball over, when they make a mistake, and just using that framework for them to identify. And the discussion around that was so incredibly powerful. So this is my encouragement for us as coaches, is don't just think about empowering standards as like this once a year thing. It's a daily thing. It's in training sessions. It's in team meetings. It's in anything that you're doing as a program. When you're concerned there may be slippage in your standards, use this framework to empower them to set the standards, because they're going to be much more likely to not only fall through on themselves, but more likely to hold each other accountable.
Well, JP, one thing I love about your story there, those conversations about what's acceptable or unacceptable or even exceptional don't have to be a 45-minute meeting once a week. It can just be a quick conversation before a drill or a quick check-in. You know, we're going to run this play. We're going to do this in practice. What's acceptable and exceptional going to look like? Just to get everybody on board for the type of behaviors that are going to make your team your best. And, you know, we start thinking about the rule of one. I think the best way to describe that, to understand what we're trying to get out of that individual ability of players to be able to self-regulate, is just the assumption that it starts with me. We want our players to say, okay, we've all acknowledged and agreed upon what acceptable or exceptional looks like, and my responsibility is to get myself to that level. Now, obviously, that's going to be easier for some of your players than it is for others. And I think there's really two key things that coaches can do to help equip players to be able to be effective with that responsibility of bringing themselves, of elevating their own level, whether it's their effort, whether it's their encouragement in practice, whether it's execution of something, that they can take responsibility for themselves. And what I would encourage coaches to do, first of all, is allow players some space to recognize what are their biggest obstacles or challenges to maintaining or rising to an acceptable or an exceptional state on a consistent basis. And for every player, like, those obstacles and challenges are probably going to be different. They might even be different from day to day. For some, it could be they've got their least favorite class or their most challenging class or their least favorite teacher right before they come for practice, and it's hard for them to get out of that state and get ready to go. For others, it might be the weight of expectations that they're carrying either for themselves or other people have for them in the game. For others, it might be, you know, they don't have any close friends on the team, and so that makes it difficult for them to get themselves up. Whatever it is, and whether or not you think those are justifiable or not, I think it's empowering for players to be able to recognize, these are the challenges that are most likely to railroad me and keep me from being able to be at that state consistently during your practices. The other thing I think that's really important here is that we provide our players with some individual interventions that can help them to raise their state when they recognize in a practice that they're not going as hard as they should be, or they're not as sharp as they should be, or they're not as focused, or whatever it might be, whatever that droop is in their behavior when they become unacceptable, at least in the eyes of the agreed upon standards. Do we give them, or can we give them, some tools to be able to raise their state before they need a teammate or a coach to intervene on their behalf?
Yeah, Nate, and this is so important. I mean, if you look at the research from Gabrielle Oettingen out of NYU, she has this thing called WOOP, Wish, Outcome, Obstacle, Plan. She's used it in academics, she's used it in the business world, but essentially getting people to identify a goal, or in this case, an acceptable behavior, a way of doing things, but then what is the obstacle to keeping you from doing the thing that you need to do, right? To be successful. And it's so, so important from a psychological aspect. There's two of my favorite ways of doing this, that we do this within teams. The first is to do it within their groups, their units before practice. They're in circles of 3 to 4 players. They circle up. They say, hey, you know, what's the biggest obstacle or biggest challenge I'm facing to being at my best today in practice? And by just getting them to name that challenge, that's a really big step and getting them to move past that obstacle or that challenge. And that's the second big way, and it's really, really important, especially with guys or girls that struggle emotionally within the game, is what are my triggers? Is it a mistake on the court? Is it a bad call by the referee or the umpire? Is it something that a coach could do? Is it something that a teammate could do? By just identifying the triggers, that's the first step to then them identifying a way that they can respond in that moment. But they first have to identify what are those triggers or what are those obstacles that are going to keep them from being at an acceptable level.
JP, I think those strategies are great for helping players to be able to recognize what their challenges are on a given day. I think the other piece of that coaches have to be aware of is that the players don't necessarily know how to raise their state on their own. You know, and if you think about, when does a player droop in practice, or when does their effort tend to wane or their attention tend to drift? A lot of times it's after a mistake. You know, they make a mistake in the game, they make a mistake in practice, and their effort goes down on the next couple of possessions. You know, and so one of the ways that you can equip your players to be able to self-regulate better and to be able to raise their own state is to help them to define and to find a mistake response that works for them. And we've talked about this in episode 82 of the podcast, some practical ways that you can do that with your players. I think another way, another place that you see players often sort of drift away in terms of those standards is when they're out of a drill or when they're out of the game and somebody else is out there getting their reps. You know, and one simple way to bring players back to the present moment, what's required of them even when they're not in the drill, is to give them a cue. So, for example, one of the things that we've been screwing around with this year is the idea that when you're out, you're also responsible for the guy who's in your place. So if you're the post and there's another post that's in the drill right now. When you're on the sideline, you're a second brain for them. You're their eyes, you're their ears, you're communicating, you're giving them reminders. You know, you're getting not just mental reps where you're imagining yourself in that place, but verbal reps where you're giving them a better chance to be successful in that job. But because you're tuned in, you're reminded of, what's my guy doing right now? How can I help my guy? And even those little questions that players are asking themselves when they're out, they help to refocus them and to bring them back to the responsibilities that everybody agreed to before we started.
Those are some great ways for players, or to help train your players to self-correct. Now, when I'm working with teams on these standards, one of the first questions I'll ask them is, after you've kind of laid them out, is who's responsible for you meeting that standard? And they're smart. They get it. Myself, right? It's personal responsibility. And then my next question is, okay, who's after yourself? And when you fail to do what you're supposed to do, who then is responsible for supporting you and meeting those standards? And most players and teams get it. They say, my teammates. They don't say coaches. The problem is they don't know how to do that. They don't know how to support each other or hold each other accountable. And so it never really happens. And so I have two really big questions that I ask teams. What can we do to support each other in meeting those standards? And the next question is, when and how should we hold each other accountable? Right? Because there's a difference in support and accountability, and really getting them to have a conversation around what that looks like for them as a team is really, really important.
And that's really a great introduction to the rule of two. If the rule of one is it starts with me, the rule of two is I need you too, for exactly those moments that you're describing right there, when a player just can't seem to get themselves at a consistent place in practice or in a game that was agreed upon by the team. And I think, again, with this rule of two, that there are two really key components to be able to empower your players to do this effectively. Number one is, I think that the players have to give one another permission to intervene when they're not at an acceptable level. But otherwise, you're going to have players that, yeah, they recognize that Johnny's not working as hard as he could, or that he's not focused, or he's not paying attention, or whatever. But they don't say anything because they don't want to offend him. They don't want to start something. They don't want to stir the pot. Like, they just kind of let him go and hope that he regulates himself. Unless Johnny gives his teammates permission to say, hey, when you catch me not being where I should be, I allow you, I want you to come and give me that feedback. And it doesn't have to be harsh or critical. We'll talk about that in a second. But just that act of a team saying, I'm willing to have you guys hold me accountable or to challenge me when I need to raise my level is so important. And it's a step that's often overlooked by a lot of coaches when they're trying to unpack this rule of three.
Yeah, and when we get a discussion going around, you know, how can we support each other? How can we hold each other accountable? What that looks like, you're going to get a lot of different ideas thrown out there. And there's usually a really great conversation. And from that conversation, we try to teach teams this powerful acronym of ERN. All right, E stands for encourage, R stands for remind, and N stands for notify. And so we try to talk about, you know, the first step is that you're an encouraging teammate. You know, you're cheering for each other on, but you got to move past being just a cheerleader out there. And you want to be able to give reminders, right? Before something happens, you know, giving them that reminder, hey, you need to do this. You need to run wide, or hey, you need to make sure you're on time tomorrow. Just, it could be anything off the field, on the field, off the court, on the court, right? But you're giving reminders before something. And the last piece is notify. And that is really trying to help them. You know, I take notify from notifications in Daniel Coyle's book, Culture Code, when he talks about pilots in aviation and how they communicate in non-judgmental ways. They're just stating what they're observing. So we try to talk to teams about just stating without having emotion in it, without having judgment in it, just letting your teammates know that you've seen that they've done something that's unacceptable. They didn't get back on defense. They showed up late to practice, whatever that be. It's just letting them know that they're at unacceptable in a way that's non-judgmental.
I think another really powerful strategy here with the rule of two, beyond the explicit giving of permission to teammates to be able to correct each other, is to have a ritual that everybody sort of follows when they're going to challenge a teammate with some feedback. For example, it could be as simple as, I see JP's the last guy back in transition defense three times in a row. We're both out on the side, and I want to raise his level. And so I go to him, and maybe our team ritual is, I start with physical contact. Hand on the back, pound the fist, you know, high five, whatever. I establish contact. That indicates we're going to have an interaction here. If I'm looking at him, he's got to give me eye contact. So we're going to mandate eye contact. I'm going to deliver the message, you know, hey, man, I know you can go harder than that. You know, you got to help me get back here. Let's go. Let's get a stop here. Like, it's encouragement, but it's also the information that he needs for the next repetition to be better. And then it closes with a physical contact again. And the person that receives it has to say, thank you, or thanks, man, or yeah, I got it. You know, they have to acknowledge it in some way. And maybe just those four steps or whatever makes most sense to your team, it provides a context that everybody, again, agrees, hey, this is how we're going to bring feedback. And the beauty of incorporating eye contact and a thank you or an acknowledgement or physical touch is that all of those things are nonverbal communicators of belonging. And when you give somebody feedback, the fear is, oh, I'm getting feedback, like I get defensive because I feel like maybe I don't belong here. Maybe they don't want me here anymore. Maybe they don't think I'm good enough. Maybe, you know, there's part of my status that's at stake here. And by just affirming them with those little nonverbal belonging cues, you're trying to disarm their defense system so they're able to accept the information and be better in their next repetition.
Yep, and you just touched on two really important pieces of effective feedback from all the research out there on what type of feedback is effective. And there's two criteria for feedback to be effective and to be received. And the first is there must be a relationship. If there is no relationship, we do not listen to people when they're giving us feedback. And the second thing is there needs to be permission. And in this, if coaches follow this process, you've started to establish relationships and build those. And secondly, you've established permission and how, and not just it's okay to give me feedback, but how we want to be able to communicate it.
And that brings us to the rule of three. Again, if the rule of one, it starts with me. The rule of two is I need you too. The rule of three is when I can't regulate myself. I can't get myself out of my slump in practice. I can't get to that acceptable level. My teammates have tried. They followed our ritual. They've reminded me. They've notified me. They've encouraged me, and I'm still not there. Now we get to the rule of three, which is coach and me. And again, this process is similar to the rule of two, but rather than engaging with a teammate to help raise your level, you're really asking now for the coach to intervene interpersonally at an individual level to help that player to raise their standard. And again, I think that we follow a similar model as to what we talked about in rule number two, which is you have to begin with players giving the coaches permission. In other words, players have to be willing to be coached. And I think often we assume that, you know, that's just part of playing a sport is, yeah, coachability is part of being an athlete. But when there's an intentionality to saying, you know, coach, I accept your intervention when you see my effort is not at an acceptable level, it has the same power as giving your teammates permission to do the same thing. So whatever that looks like for you, I do think it's a necessary step for your players to acknowledge that there will be times that they need a coach to step in and to help them raise their level. And I think the second part of this rule of three here that's so important is once the coach has permission from the player, what should that look like? What should that interaction between the coach and the individual player look like when they have to deliver some feedback or a notification to help challenge them to raise to the level of standard or exceptional? And JP, I know you've worked with coaches on this in lots of different contexts. What are some ways that coaches are using out there to be able to challenge their players in a way that they're able to receive the feedback and move forward with it?
Yeah, well, let me share just kind of what I had a bunch of coaches do in the last week, Nate, which was I had them send out a Google form asking the question, what's one thing I wish my coach knew that could help coach me better? Now, I took that question from John O'Sullivan's book, Every Moment Matters, and shared it with my coaches. They sent it out to players. Now, what was really interesting about those responses, and this is probably across maybe 11, 12 different teams, we're talking almost, you know, 150 plus players, is I would say 75% of the answers that kids gave had something to do with how they wanted feedback. Like they felt that they just wished their coach knew, understood how they wanted feedback better. But the other part of that is they weren't all the same. It wasn't like, oh man, I wish coach was just a little bit more positive with me. Yes, that was some people. Other people were like, I wish coach gave it to me more straight, right? So every player was different in how they wanted the feedback. And so I think for coaches, it's identifying on a personal level how to give each player individual feedback in a way that works for them. I think that's really, really important. However, I also think that their bottom line is players, because they've, you know, given the coach permission to coach them, they have to work as individuals to take feedback in a way that's not always going to be the way that they would prefer it. And that's life. Like they're going to go on beyond this, and their jobs, they're going to work jobs, their bosses, they're not going to always ask them, or the teachers aren't always going to ask them how they want feedback. And so they have to work if they want to be successful in later in life. I think that's a really important skill for them. But I think there's a great value, and we do this within our teams and our workshops, where we have the players as a group share and discuss various ways that coaches could support them and meet those standards. But I think at that stage, it's important for coaches to share some of the ways and the reasons why they give feedback in those ways. For example, using questions to help players to self-evaluate is a big one. A player's not giving the effort that you want to see, you might pull them aside. Hey, on a scale of 1 to 5, what's your effort at? This is a common intervention that we talk about. Most players don't get bothered by that. They actually appreciate, they engage in it. But some people think, man, coach is being a jerk here. Obviously, I'm not giving my best effort. I wish he'd just tell me, you know. So I think there's some, you know, value in explaining as a coach why you choose to give feedback in these ways so that players understand where it's coming from. And where it's coming from is, I'm giving you feedback in these moments to help you become the player that I know you can be, to help you do the things that I know you want to do, because you've said in this meeting or this moment, you know, before this drill, this is what we need to do to be successful.
JP, I think you bring up a lot of great questions here. You know, one of the ways to get your players to start reflecting on that, and quite honestly, your players have probably never been asked that question before, you know, and they may not have a great frame of reference because they've probably never had input into how they are being coached or taught or parented or what have you. And so one of the ways that we would start that is just, you know, in a team meeting, having just, again, a note card response where you can ask the players, what is the best way for the coach to intervene and deliver that feedback for you personally? And just try to have them describe what the ideal, you know, conversation would look like in the middle of a practice or in a 30-second interaction. And then from there, as we, you know, engage in one-on-ones or just little side conversations through the year, after reading those and trying to mold my coaching and my interactions with those individual players after what they've said, now we're just having some conversations going along about how's that going? You know, is the feedback being delivered the way that you prefer, that you can use it? And again, it isn't just about necessarily making them feel good. It's about the feedback having an effect on them growing as a player or as a teammate. And so it's not just a one-off, you know, where they just sort of write it down and it's over, but it's a continual conversation and maintenance of that intervention. You know, the other thing that we hear from coaches a lot that are experimenting with the rule of three in a lot of different ways is one of the biggest challenges is that you have to give players the space to be able to self-reflect and self-correct before the coach jumps in to save the day. And in fact, you have to give their teammates an opportunity to intervene before the coach stops practice and tries to, you know, come to the rescue and fix everything. And I know the coaches that I'm working with that are using this, that's been the biggest challenge, is just providing a 30-second break for the team to try to figure it out before the coach just throws them on the line or goes ballistic or kicks them out of practice or whatever. And it's just a different rhythm and it's a different style that I think it takes some time to get comfortable with as a coach.
Yeah, but it's not just having the patience to not step in. That's really important, but it's also what that looks like when we step in. In episode 113, I talk about the team quick set, where a coach puts a series of drills or small-sided games, sets a standard upon them, and then uses resets on a clock or a timer to really challenge the players to be not just assessing their own themselves, but to be looking around and assessing their teammates. Are they meeting the standard? And then make the corrections necessary. And eventually, when teams struggle to self-correct, the coach does need to step in. And what does that look like? Well, one of the big things I really encourage coaches is to lead with questions in those moments, to use certain questions to get them to not just make observations on their own behavior, but their teammates' behavior. So where traditionally as a coach, for example, I might have brought the team in and say, guys, you guys aren't talking. You need to start communicating more. We talked about this. This is the standard in this drill. Now I'm bringing them in and I'm just asking, you know, why am I bringing you in here? All right, what are we not doing that we're supposed to be doing? And when they recognize where that drop and that standard has occurred, then it's like, well, if you're taking responsibility for yourself, great, but have you seen other teammates not doing what they're supposed to be doing? Have you seen any teammates at unacceptable? And if you get a head nod or a few people going, yeah, it's like, okay, did you say anything about it? Right? And really trying to talk them through in that moment and come back to that ERN of, all right, how can you help support the teammates that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing right now? And so you're really coaching them up on the rule of two, right? As opposed to just, all right, go back there and do your job. And that's a really, really important strategy. It's really done simply in partner work and peer work. If guys are doing some work in a drill together or a little game together, instead of going, like for instance, in basketball, a lot of times when you got two guys partner up and they're one guy shooting, he's supposed to be shot ready, the other guy's supposed to be making quick passes, you might go, instead of going to the guy that's supposed to be shot ready, he's not in his stance, you might go to his partner and say, hey, tell me what does the stance look like? You know, you get him to reflect on his teammate, to scan, assess his teammate. And if he says, oh, he's not in a low position, he's not ready for the ball, he's not calm for it, then say, okay, well, what should you be doing then? So you're not just working with them to coach themselves or to lead themselves. You're working with them to lead and coach each other.
JP, as we get ready to wrap up here this week, you know, for coaches that are considering the rule of three, and particularly that level of coach and me, how do I best intervene or give feedback to an individual player here? Daniel Coyle has a great model in the culture code that we've been experimenting with and I really like. And basically it's three simple steps for delivering feedback in a short amount of time. So the first step is just to affirm the player's belonging. We are better because you are here. And regardless of that player's role, whether they're a starter, a rotation player, they're a reserve player, scout team member, like just affirming that we're better with you on our team is a great place to just kind of de-escalate some of the defense systems that might come up naturally when they sense that they're about to get some negative feedback. Then the second step is just to deliver the information, the notification, the reminder, the piece that if you just do this, you might be a little bit better. And the third piece, which I really like and I think is unique, is that he talks about giving them a statement of confidence. I'm giving you this information because I know you can do it. I know it will make you better, and I know it will make us better. You know, when you think about just that process, belonging, information, and I know you can do this, it seems so much more empowering and might be a great place for coaches to start that are just not sure how to engage in some of those little conversations at that rule of three level.
Now, when we work with coaches on implementing the rule of three and becoming a player-led team, eventually we get the question, what happens when the players still don't do what they're supposed to do and they're staying at unacceptable? And for this step, I would encourage coaches to check out episode 113 of Coaching Culture. It's where we talk about transformational discipline. Now, just before we let you get out of here, Nate and I just want to let you know that our next Coaching Culture workshop that's open to the public is going to be in Chicago on April 5th. It's going to be an all-day event for you. You can bring your staff, you can bring some coaching friends, but it's an incredible experience. We'll be sharing more about it in the coming weeks. But if you want to go ahead and register now and make sure you get a spot, go to thriveonchallenge.com/public-workshop. That's thriveonchallenge.com/public-workshop. Put a link in the episode details as well. We hope to see you there.